and welcome. If anyone across the world had been monitoring the headlines of last week, then they'd probably come away with thinking that India is not a pluralistic society anymore. Instead, we are insular, intolerant, and see the world through bigotry-tinted lenses. This after an advertisement for a jewelry range which showed an interfaith marriage was withdrawn after boycott calls on social media. But is that the reality? What if the millions of interfaith marriages among Indians, including like mine between a Malayali Christian and a Punjabi Sikh, what if their reality? Can the alleged hurt sentiments of a vocal minority, be it Hindu or Muslim, decide the choices of the silent majority? Today we're going to highlight the other India, because by not speaking up, we the people are party to normalizing hate between communities, and India needs to hear their voices too. And joining us to share their stories are Natasha Badwar, a filmmaker and author, Smriti Lamek, journalist and craftivist, Dr. Kaustav Dekar, assistant professor of political science at the Dibrugarh University, Zara Raj Parwal, digital content creator, Athira and Shamim. Athira is a public policy professional and Shamim, her husband, is an entrepreneur. But let's start with Smriti. Smriti Lamek, what is your story? What's your reality?
Thank you for having me, Sarah. You know, it's not just that I'm in an interfaith marriage. There's an old song by Michael Murphy called I Come From a Long Line of Love. My parents come from two different communities. My maternal grandparents were from two different communities. And my maternal grandfather had a Chinese grandmother. So, you know, I find this idea of interfaith marriage being unusual, a very strange one, because in my own life, I don't know too many marriages from the same community. To my mind, this uproar over this interfaith marriage is what is new, strange, and not part of the India that I grew up in.
And so how did you get married?
So although my parents are from two different ethnic backgrounds, they're both Christian. And they're both very strong in their faith, both believing Christians, if not church-going Christians. And I remember when I met my husband and I told them that I'd like to get married to him, it's not that I'd anticipated trouble, really, but I did think they'd have queries. And strangely, the only query my mother had was that, you know, he's very ambitious and you're very ambitious. And how will your career ever get any, you know, any face time if you marry a man who's equally ambitious? That was her only thought. It was not that he's a Hindu. But, you know, I'd anticipated that we'd have we'd get married under the Special Marriage Act and that would be it. But as it happens, my husband's family didn't come around. We waited a couple of years, gave them time to get used to the idea, and they didn't. So and until then, my husband and I had only planned to have a simple registered wedding and a grand reception. And frankly, the first step was my husband's. He said, you know what, your parents have dreamt of seeing their daughter walk down the aisle, have a white wedding. And you know, I don't want to deny them that. They've been so supportive, waited 2 years, tried to reason with my family. So let's give them the white wedding that they want. And when my parents heard about it, they were so touched by this gesture that they said, you know, why should you be the only one to have a wedding that, you know, that you dreamed of? Why would you imagine that a man hasn't imagined what his wedding, you know, dreamt of a certain kind of wedding? So let's ensure that he gets the Hindu wedding too. And my husband is a Konkani. And my parents went out of their way to try and find a Konkani priest. We couldn't find one in North India. We ended up finding a Tamil Brahmin priest. And so I had a church wedding. First of all, we had our wedding registered under the Special Marriages Act. Then we had a church wedding. And then we had a Konkani and me, we had a Tamil Brahmin wedding. So that was my parents, and they organized it. My husband and I were both busy with work. We literally just landed in time for the wedding. And it was done to the best of their ability. And we actually held the Hindu ceremony in my parents' home, which is a Christian home.
Smriti, that is an amazing story. It really is. Thank you for sharing that with us. You know, but I don't want to sugar gloss this issue either. The Tanishq advertisement has been released in the India of 2020, a very different India from that of the 70s and the 80s when your parents got married, when Smriti's parents got married. And the message sent via the trolls post the Tanishq episode is that a sympathetic view of interreligious marriage is unacceptable. And the reality also is that it's not always a bed of roses. It's not always a story of how love eventually triumphs. So Athira and Shamim, they are the most newlywed of all of our guests today. Athira, thank you for joining us. You met 14 years ago and you got married in December 2019. But on the days before your wedding, instead of having the luxury of being preoccupied with the usual bridal worries of trousseau, gharara, sharara, sari, fitting, whatever it was, basically enjoying the moment, you had to deal with a lot of unnecessary ugliness and your freedom to choose was threatened. Tell us about that.
So this happened a month before our wedding, when we had to apply for our marriage under the Special Marriage Act. So there is a provision where you have to apply 30 days prior to your wedding, and our applications will be posted on the registration offices of both our registration offices close to both our homes for 30 days. And apparently, anyone who has got an objection to this can raise it. And sure, that would be considered. What happened is that after we applied for our marriage, our applications, along with 100 other applications of people who have filed their marriage under Special Marriage Act, were on Facebook. And the application contains our address, our photograph, and what our occupation is. And a lot of right-wing extremist groups were talking about how they should form groups and they should go to the girls' homes, because all these girls must be getting married without their parents' will, and they should counsel the parents to ensure that this wedding is avoided. So we obviously reported this on Facebook, and Facebook pulled down these posts as well, but then it moved to WhatsApp. So until then, we had not informed our parents, but one fine day, my mom forwards me a WhatsApp which says that in Kerala, Love Jihad is back. And it had PDF applications of around 125 couples who had registered under SMA. So that definitely was not a nice situation to deal with. But we were very busy with our wedding, and you know, we waited for 13 years. We didn't want anything to ruin our wedding. So we did focus on the wedding. But after the wedding, the Kerala Chief Minister's daughter had gotten married to another politician who is a Muslim. And the kind of hate that was spread on Facebook against this couple made me write about it. And that got a lot of couples who are going through the same challenge reach out to me, and they told me about how these right-wing groups had gone to their homes and threatened their families, and they did not know what to do or how to deal with it. It is only after doing a little bit of research we understood that as part of the digitization mission that the Kerala government had undertaken, they had put these applications on the website, which made it very easy for the extremist groups to download and put it on Facebook. It's a clear case of doxing. The moment we reached out to the minister, he took notice of it, and in 2 days, he ensured that these details are removed from the website. Mm. So yeah, it has been a struggle, but we were just glad that we finally ensured that no longer in future any couple who want to get married will have to face the situation where their documents are public. But still, this 30-day notice period where your application is posted in front of the registration offices still creates a safety threat as well as a privacy violation for all the families who are getting married.
Okay. Interesting. So, Natasha, if you could come in over here. Natasha, you're Hindu, you're married to a Muslim, and you've written extensively about how blessed you are that you have wonderful in-laws who've been very supportive, very loving, very warm. So I don't want to touch on that, but what was interesting, what struck me in Athira's story is that these so-called activists, they went to the girl's house. So they think that it's the girl who is probably getting married without her parents' consent, or it's the girl who is, you know, is naive, or and possibly, like, which is probably what you faced a lot, it's the woman who is, there's a misogynistic and paternalizing attitude, right, towards interfaith marriages and for women, that it's the woman who is gullible, the woman is not intelligent enough, she cannot make this choice, how can she be marrying a Muslim man? I mean, he surely must be hoodwinking him.
Absolutely. So this very much derives from the idea on which, you know, all arranged marriages in every community in India are based on, that young people do not have, should not have the autonomy to choose who they marry, that marriages are not about love, they're not about what young people want for each other, they're not about couplehood. A marriage is about, connecting to another family with the right caste, right class, right religion, right address, right bank balance, etc. And so this is a kind of control that is not new. You know, it's a kind of control that in Southeast Asian countries, we have seen for centuries, and particularly, the last century. Any love marriage, any marriage where people choose who they want to marry, is a resistance to that. And I think that it is really the responsibility of each person who wants to exercise their own autonomy to take a stand. Not all of us are going to fall in love with somebody of the other religion. And, you know, if we look back at our first meetings with our partners, it's not religion that you're noticing. It's you know, that comes much later in the picture when you are trying to connect your families, or when you realize that there is resistance in your family.
Interesting point. When you first meet, it's not religion that you're noticing. Let's ask Zara Raj Parwal, because Zara, you are a Muslim woman married to a Hindu guy who works. I think is your husband is sitting with you. Who works in IT, and you're especially important to this conversation because as you're a Muslim woman married to a Hindu guy, because you know that is the stick the right-wing fundamentalists like to beat, right? That as I pointed out in Natasha's case, but you met through Facebook. So at that point of time, so when you met through,
Go ahead.
So when you the name pops up, right? That's the first thing. And I'm assuming, did you meet just as friends, or did you meet because you were looking for a love interest, or you were seeking love? And then did the name, the fact that he had a Muslim name, or the fact that you had a Muslim name in your husband's case, did that, set off any red alerts, or what did that make you feel like?
Well, actually, we met as friends because we had common friends, and religion was not even an issue for us. It was so organic. We really liked each other. I come from a family where there are multiple interfaith marriages, and they're all very happy, and they have their own traditions that they follow. So it really wasn't a concern for us. And religion only came into the picture when we decided to get married and we introduced our families. And our families were so accepting and loving and accommodating that the difference is actually never really divided anybody. There was an effort made from both our parents and our extended families to come together to celebrate us and to be on the same platform. Is why when the Tanishq ad happened, I did put out a tweet, which was purely to say that every story is unique and every story entirely depends on the journey you've had, the family you have, the education you've had access to, the socioeconomic background you may have. And Tanish decided to depict one kind of a story. And we are boycotting something or the other every single day on Twitter. So it's become a trend almost to boycott something. If you don't relate to it, it's okay. It could be somebody else's story. It could be my story. It could be, the story of my neighbor. Mm-hmm. And that's okay.
Okay, every day we're boycotting something or the other. Dr. Kaustav Dekha is also joins us. He's also had an interfaith marriage, Dr. Kaustav Dekha, yeah. Married to a Christian woman from the Northeast. But doctor, you're also a professor. So let me ask you to put this into context, right? This outrage culture, as Zara's talking about, it's not new. It hasn't, it's not happening only now. We drove MF Hussain away. True. We led to the banning of Salman Rushdie, Rohinton Mystery's book, Deepa Mehta's fire. This has been going on since the 90s, vandalizing museums and art galleries. And now the problem is there's social media to magnify it and make it seem like it's the majority view.
True. Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right, Sarah, because actually the whole issue, it's... social media has taken it to a different dimension altogether. But as my previous panelists have very rightly mentioned, I mean, there are so many stories, and this is what is the point that we have to really emphasize on. And when I tweeted about this ad, I gave it a thought whether I should actually venture into that or not. And then I realized, I mean, at one point when I got married, because since we are talking about our stories today, and I do believe in personalist political very seriously. And when actually I married, I'm being in the background of SMS Hindu, and my wife from a background of being Christian Naga. I really did not think that we have done anything significant. We are just two young people who met in a metro, that is Delhi. We are at that point, and we clicked like my other friends today are sharing for common interests, like we would share a love for trekking, about music, books, like any other people. So I never really thought that it is something to be talked about one day in the national. But sadly, today, I mean, except to such a point that, you know, we are happy to share our intimate case. And you're absolutely right.
So insignificant, something truly personal. And here I am, we have reached a stage where I have to make you come here and share these personal, intimate moments of your lives on national TV, because we need to do it to support each other and to have control over our own narratives. So Shamim, then, Shamim, Dr. Professor here points out that he thought for a second about whether he should tweet after this Tanishq ad, right? Similarly, for both of you, you got married, marriage was over, you could have moved on, but you chose to speak up and you chose to say that, look, I'm going to share my story so that this doesn't happen to other people.
Hello.
Hashim, go ahead.
So when the marriage happened, we had the experience for Ratra share. So we primarily want to come forward and share our experience just to let others know, like, what are the struggles that interfaith marriage people are facing. And maybe if we could show them that there is a way, like, you need not be worried about what is going around the world or people trying to put unnecessary pressure on you. So this was the primary motive, like, we thought we'll come forward and then speak up.
All right. And Zara, I'm sorry, I don't know your husband's name, but he has joined you. He's sitting by your side, supporting you tonight on this show. So, a quick word to you again about, I think as Athira pointed out, that once we stand up against those who are propagating this bigotry, they will then become irrelevant. Why have you chosen to come on the show?
So, my husband's name is Nikhil, and he didn't even know I tweeted this about this, that, you know, people have to come out with their stories and own their life journey. We don't need to hide about it.
So, Nikhil, why did you then decide to join us? Because we weren't informed that you were going to join us. Only Zara was supposed to.
I absolutely am in support. I was in support of the tweet, and I've always wanted to stand by all her decisions. I think it is very necessary that we speak up. We speak up for change. We speak up for letting people know that we're moving forward. We aren't moving backwards. We need to rise above these things of, you know, comparing everything and taking judgment and taking opinions based on religion and caste and creed. So I was in office when I actually saw the tweet, and I liked it and I retweeted it. And it was only after 24 hours that we realized that, you know, and then when we saw that we were getting trolled, and we realized that, you know, why is this happening, and what is the real reason behind people drinking so much hate towards something that is so sweet that was portrayed in the ad.
All right, so lastly then, you know, let me ask, do any of you have kids? I know Natasha does. So let me ask you, Natasha, you know, art, you have been a filmmaker, you're a writer, you're an author. Art imitates life. This pushback against the Tanishq ad isn't happening in a vacuum, right? That is the reality. As a parent, what do you tell your kids? How do you explain to them the world they're living in? What should we do going forward?
So to be honest, children have extraordinary clarity about right and wrong. You know, so my children have been facing questions from classmates where they've been asked if they're Pakistani, where they've been asked, you know, about how their father is, because children have from television learnt to equate being Muslim with being a terrorist or being a Pakistani. So they've grown up with this kind of this kind of bigotry, and they've always kind of, it never hurts them, you know. They just write it off. They're like, who are these people? How can they even think like that? And that was their reaction to the Tanishq ad. You know, it was like, have they started all over again? And one of the things that I think we must say on this show is that this is a phenomena that we are seeing such a rise of, because for the first time, it has the sanction of the state. We have a state that is unsympathetic to the idea of secular India. And that is the problem. A lot of the trolling, a lot of the trolls are actually followed by our own leaders. So instead of them, you know, so people are actually rewarded for pushing hate on social media. And that's a new phenomena. And that's what we have to really resist and push back.
Correct. All right, we're winding to a close. So let me just get Smriti back in. Smriti, I want to ask you again, as a journalist now who writes extensively on various issues, the withdrawal of the Tanishq ad, what did that make you feel like? Because in a sense, when Tanishq withdrew this ad, it was an acceptance and a denial of this narrative, of our reality, all of the panelists here, this part of India, this reality of India, it was a denial of that.
I don't know if it's a wise move for Tanishq to pull back the ad in terms of taking a stand. I mean, I don't think it's right. Once you've taken a stand, you've got to stand by it no matter what. The entire point of a stand is that you know you're going to do it in the face of a certain amount of opposition. But that said, you know, I feel like the kind of aggression that Tanishq would face and the kind of violence that they were exposing themselves to, it's sort of unfair to ask them to take one for the secular or the liberal team. It's unfair for a guard standing at a Tanishq showroom or a salesperson standing there to have to face violence for something that perhaps they don't believe in. I mean, we're putting somebody else in the front row in the firing line. So I mean, I see that there is a larger point to be made, and that this is a stand Tanishq has to take, and I don't know if liberals like us can buy enough Tanishq to make up for perhaps the hit their sales would take. But I do think that, I know that they faced a lot of aggression, and I think one would have to be in their shoes to know why they did what they did.
One would have to be in their shoes. That, I think, is an apt statement to end this show on. Everybody, all of us in our country, we need to think about putting ourselves in somebody else's shoes, in the other's shoes, before we act. Thank you all for joining us, for sharing these personal, very intimate moments, your photographs, for speaking up at this point of time to show that you are the real India. Thank you. We're out of time on We the People. See you next week.